Technical difficulties solved.
All right, folks, we're going to do an episode of Thank the Light now. If you're interested in that, I mean, if you want to come back to Dez and Justin reminisce, we'll be doing that event. We'll be doing more of that. You don't worry about it. We'll be getting back. Old 9216 chat. That's what we call it around here. So this is a big one. Jess has really talked this up. So we'll see. This is three chapters after the one we just covered last week. And things were really heating up then. So we're going to blow it out. This is chapter 47 from The Great Hunt. The grave is no bar to my call. And what the fuck's going on, Justin? What does the Horn of Valir have to do with any of this?
It's got all of the things to do with this. So first of all, someone wasn't paying attention to the show. I'm looking at you, motherfucker.
Me.
They actually might not say it in the show, but that's how they know it's the Horn of Valir. There's an old tongue inscription on it that says, "The grave is no bar to my call."
Oh.
And it's just kind of like your French horn looking trumpet. It's nothing spectacular. And it blows kind of a weird note, but it does something really special. It calls a bunch of dead guys back to fight for you. The little fucking catch 22 is that if the Shadow has it and manages to sound it for their side, they don't really have allegiances to anybody except who sounds the horn. So you could be a little kid, or you could be a bad guy, or you could be a grandma that's knitting and you decide to play some music and all these dead guys show up.
But it says here, I'm going to read the first long sentence, and then if we need more, we need more.
The White Cloak episode was boring enough.
The Horn of Valir is a powerful artifact. Little is known of how it works, but the effect is clear. When the horn is sounded, the great heroes of the pattern are summoned to the battle, will serve the trumpeter, but always on the side of the light.
I don't think that's true. Otherwise, they wouldn't be so concerned with getting it back.
We have come to the horn, but we must follow the banner and the dragon.
Oh, that's right. Fucking look at you, guy. That's true. Totally 100%. So I guess technically if the dragon decided to, go dark, then I guess they would follow him. But I guess I thought it was anybody who blew it. They would. So, but I technically, if they had the banner and they blew it and they were together, you'll find that out in the Eye of the World. They get the banner and the horn together. And so technically, but if you the dragon is the key for sure. The banner is a very important thing. It calls the people. Everyone recognizes it. Everybody knows. It's like, even though this creature doesn't exist, they see it. They're like, that's the dragon. Oh, shit. Oh, shit.
Oh.
Yeah, the Aiel know what it is, Rand gets branded twice, he's got the Heron brands.
Yeah.
And then he gets fucking dragon tattoos on his forearms by going to Riudan. He just comes out of the... It's similar to the arches that the women go through for the Aes Sedai testing.
Yes.
But they're pillars that the Aiel women go through, and also the clan chiefs. So it's you don't have to channel into it. This one, for one, you can just walk through it. And number two, it is for men and women. So I don't know if the one in the tower is just for women, but you only see women use it. So That being said, I guess it will only follow light. Well, that just spoils a lot of my excitement. Just kidding. I hate you. You're a jerk. No,
well,
I'm just kidding.
It seems weird though. There's definitely some loophole because it says "and the dragon," but I guess the horn would know if it was a false dragon.
Yeah, chances are if it was a false dragon, they would have never found it at the Eye of the World. He would never would have made it there in the first place,
So it might be this is explained by Ardor Hawkwing at Falm at the last battle.
Oh, it's not the last battle.
Wait. At the last battle, they accept Matt as the substitute of the dragon.
Yes.
There is no direct mention of it in the prophecy of the... Oh, maybe that's why it's not in your Bible, because there's no direct mention of it.
Maybe, yeah. Well, no, I mean, Hawkwing says that in, after Matt blows the horn, I think he says it. He's like, yeah, we follow the dragon banner, so get it out, And then they get out the banner, and actually they... He's like, well, the dragon's my friend. And eventually, I'm pretty sure Matt is going to be tied to the horn also when he dies. They're like, we'll see you later, buddy.
Bye.
So this one's a little bit of a long one, but it's kind of just one of those ones. We probably don't have to say a lot about it afterwards. You just kind of like react to it and just be like, whoa, wow. Okay. So that happened. This is kind of right after the last clip. You know, the White Cloaks are gathering to attack. The Shan Chan are ready. They've got their foothold in Falm. And the boys, our Eamon Fields boys and Loyal are kind of stuck between just like the five, like the whole five will ride forth. I think it's talking about them, you know, her and Rand, Matt, Perrin, Loyal.
Yeah. We got to do a Loyal episode.
We'll do. Here we go.
Rand heard Ingtar's voice rise. The light and Shunawa! The clash of steel joined the roar of other voices. Where's Ingtar? Matt shouted. What's going on? He had the horn of Valyr lashed to the high pommel of his saddle as if it were just any horn. But the dagger
Matt.
Was in his belt.
It's cool, I got it.
The ruby-tipped hilt. Matt can take the horn and the dagger onto. He is doing it so we can all get away, Rand said. For that, too. We will all take the horn to Varen, and then you can help her take it wherever she says it belongs. What do you mean? Perrin asked. The light and Shinoa! Ingtar shouts sword after him.
Ingtar has just bought their escape with their life. He's Trollocs are chasing them, and they're in like a little kind of like choke point. And Rand, I'm not going to spoil what he says to Rand, but he's like, hey, I got this. You guys go. You know what you need to do. And he stays to hold this like spot where one man can hold, you know, 20, because they just can't get at him more than one at a time. So he just keeps screaming for the light and Shinawa, because he's just killing. He's just just going crazy. And it's killing Rand, because you'll see when you get there why it hurts Rand so much. But he's like, he's so torn, because it's like there's a lot of feels going on.
He wished he did not feel as if he were running away from Ingtar's cry, running from what he was supposed to do. Death is lighter than a feather. Duty heavier than a mountain. So many duties. Egwene, the horn, Fane, Matt, and his dagger. Why can't there just be one at a time? I have to take care of all of them.
Rand's feeling the pressure.
The light, Egwene. They were in a scanty copse of bare-branched trees atop one of the hills overlooking Falma. The others galloped up behind him. What do you mean? Perrin demanded. We can help Varen take the horn where it's supposed to go. You three take the horn to Varen, Rand said. Matt caressed the dagger's hilt. That's all very well, but what about you? Matt, Varen must take you and that dagger to Tar-Valon, so you can finally be free of it. You don't have any time to waste. He pointed back toward Falma. The wagon yards and horse lots were turning black with Shan Chan soldiers. With troops of cavalry riding scaled beasts as well as armored men on horses, colorful gonfalons marking the officers. Grom dotted the ranks and other strange creatures. Almost
like a giant three-eyed frog. Monstrous
birds and lizards. And great things like nothing he could describe, with gray wrinkled skin and huge tusks. Two flying beasts with leathery wings, 20 spans tip to tip, soared high overhead. All that for us? Matt said incredulously. Who do they think we are? We aren't going the other way either, Lord Rand, Hiren said. White cloaks. Hundreds of them. Maybe that's why the Shan Chan are gathering, Matt said hopefully. Because of the white cloaks. Maybe it doesn't have anything to do with us at all. There is going to be a battle here in a few minutes. He was staring at the horn of Valyr, he realized. They all were. The curled golden horn hung at Matt's pommel, the focus of every eye. It has to be there at the last battle, Matt said, licking his lips. Nothing says it can't be used before then. He pulled the horn free of its lashings and looked at them anxiously. Nothing says it can't.
He's a gambler. He's like, fuck it. Let's give it a shot, right? No one said it can't be used before then, as long as it's there at the last one.
His own thoughts were too urgent to allow room for speech. The longer he looked at the horn, the more urgent his thoughts became. Have to. Matt's hand shook as he raised the horn of Valyr to his lips. It was a clear note, golden as the horn was golden. The trees around them seemed to resonate with it, and the ground under their feet, the sky overhead. That one long sound encompassed everything. Out of nowhere, a fog began to rise. First thin wisps hanging in the air, then thicker billows, and thicker, until it blanketed the land like clouds. It seemed to come from every direction at once. Abruptly, the ground ahead flew up with a roar, showering him with dirt and pebbles. From the white blindness to his right, he heard another roar, and men and horses screamed.
This is the Shan Chan.
His horse leaped forward as he dug in his heels, and he heard the roar as the legion, as much of it as still lived, followed. Rand could not see the trees around them any longer. Matt had lowered the horn, eyes wide with awe, but the sound of it still rang in Rand's ears. Yet Rand could see. He could see, but it was mad. Falma floated somewhere beneath him, its landward border black with the Seanchan ranks, lightning ripping its streets. Falma hung over his head. There, white cloaks charged and died as the earth opened in fire beneath their horses' hooves. There, men ran about the decks of tall, square ships in the harbor. Lord Rand! Down the billowing fog, as if it were the side of a mountain, rode shapes on horses. At first, the dense mists hid more than that, but slowly they came closer, and it was Rand's turn to gasp. He knew them. Men, not all in armor, and women. Their clothes and their weapons came from every age, but he knew them all. More. He knew their faces, but he heard 100 names when he looked at each face. Some so different he did not recognize them as names at all. Michael instead of Mikkel. Patrick instead of Pedrig. Oscar instead of Otarin.
This is your first hint about how old Rand's soul is and how old his mind is.
Dark, deep-set eyes,
he knew these people.
His great sword Justice at his side.
To one extent or another. Archer Hawkwing.
Matt gaped at them as they reined in before him and the others. Is this all of you? They were a little more than 100, Rand saw, and realized that somehow he had known that they would be.
It takes more than bravery to bind a man to the horn.
Archer Hawkwing's voice was deep and carrying. Or a woman, Brigitte said sharply.
Or a woman.
Invaders have come. Men who call themselves Seanchan, who used chained Aes Sedai in battle. They must be driven back into the sea. And, to his surprise, several of the small host behind Archer Hawkwing chuckled, and Brigitte, testing her bowstring, laughed. You always choose women who cause you trouble, Luz Theron. It had a fond sound, as between old friends. My name is Randall Thor, he snapped. You have to hurry. There isn't much time.
Time?
Brigitte said, smiling.
We have all of time.
Gidel Kane dropped his reins and, guiding his horse with his knees, drew a sword in either hand. All along the small band of heroes, there was an unsheathing of swords, an unlimbering of bows, a hefting of spears and axes.
I have fought by your side times beyond number, Luz Theron, and faced you as many more. The wheel spins us out for its purposes, not ours, to serve the pattern. I know you if you do not know yourself. We will drive these invaders out for you. Something holds me.
Suddenly he turned his sharp-eyed gaze on Rand.
You are here. Have you the banner?
A murmur ran through those behind him.
Yes.
The murmur among the heroes rose.
The pattern weaves itself around our necks like halters. You are here. The banner is here. The weave of this moment is set. We have come to the horn, but we must follow the banner. And the dragon.
Huron made a faint sound as if his throat had seized. Give it to me, Rand, he said gravely. If they need it, give it to me. Hastily, Rand helped him tie the banner to the pole. When Perrin remounted, pole in hand, a current of air seemed to ripple the pale length of the banner, so the serpentine dragon appeared to move alive. The wind did not touch the heavy fog, only the banner.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Lots to unpack there. So, questions?
Yeah. Not yet. I mean, I have a few things written down, but I think I need to just hear you talk about it.
Okay. So, one of the reasons I wanted to follow that one with the White Cloaks one is that you see how important the White Cloaks, they're a big force, even if they're not well liked. And, you know, they just get more or less annihilated. By between the Seanchan and the heroes of the horn, there's not a lot left of their army, except for the guys that kind of he left back to tell his son how he died. Like I said, the heroes are like 100, but you know, think of the ghost army that Aragorn calls, you know, that's you can't kill them. So they're just like, bah, 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 and Brigitte's shooting arrows crazy, and like they're all like the baddest dudes ever, but like. You're one of the main reasons I picked this is you're seeing that like there's no denying anymore that Rand could be a false dragon or got lucky. It's like they're naming him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They're hey, Luz Theron, what's up, bro? I missed you. It's like Rand's like, even he at that point, like this is when really, even after Rand does everything after the Eye of the World, he still is kind of like, I don't know. You know, I'm going to be used by the White Tower. This is him going like, I am the dragon. I got to do this. And then right after this is when he takes off to Tyr. You know, as soon as he's healthy, he goes to get Kalendor.
Is Luz Theron considered, I know it's not this simple. Is he considered a bad guy, or did he just make a bad choice 3,000 years ago?
Well, Anakin, it depends on your point of view. It's more like he made a bad choice. You know, I think most people kind of utter the name the dragon in fear because of what he did. I think it's been enough time where it's been lost to where they don't really know. Like, some people kind of like, you know, and like, that's what you, it's a great, just another like really good question, because you really get to see, I literally have written down right here, effect on the world, recognizing Rand as the dragon. So while this is going on, and I don't know if it has to do with the horn or just, you know, Rand being who he is, if it's like, maybe he went to Telen Riad and this is happening in Telen Riad, but because it's so prevalent, it's flashes of it are being seen in the sky of the waking world. So Rand is fighting Ishmael in the sky right after this. And it's like this epic battle where like people drew pictures of these giant men in the sky fighting, you know, and it's like, it's obvious, like people can recognize Rand. It's part of the reason why he's running from town to town. They're like, I know you, where do I know you from? Oh, that fucking dragon of the drawing of the guy in the sky. Yeah, that's how I know.
Oh.
And so good, bad, and different. They all know who he is because there's drawings of him fighting Ishmael in the sky.
Okay.
And, you know, and there's all these rumors just racing inland from Falm after the battle of like, you know, the heroes of the horn, the Aes Sedai, fighting Aes Sedai because, you know, Egwene and Nynaeve end up channeling and trying to, they fight their way out of Falm. So it's like, oh, Aes Sedai are, you know, the power is being thrown around because they haven't taken the oaths yet. So they can do what, and they are all incredibly strong. Elaine is there too, who is the daughter heir of Andor. They've all grown in the power quite quickly and they're very strong, but they're still accepted. So they're not bound by the three oaths. So they can pretty much use the power at their discretion. And they're still good people, but they don't fuck around if they're trying to get out, you know?
And they can lie.
They can lie and they can light shit up with the power, especially Nynaeve, dude, when she gets mad. She is a force, dude. She's a force in healing. She can do... Nynaeve is... Egwene is a badass, too, but Nynaeve is like, dude, she's awesome.
What is... speaking of interrupting the flow, is Falm special besides it just happens to be the city, this battle?
Not really. It's mentioned in the prophecies. Like, if you remember the blood calls blood thing, they talk about Toman Head.
Yes.
It's like a peninsula that goes out kind of in the ocean a little bit, and that's where Falm is. And it just, I'm really not, I'd have to really dig into it to see if there's more significance than just, it's just kind of where it happened to be. But like, you know, you get to see the White Cloaks before in last episode and they're there and they're kind of like, they're just kind of out of touch.
Yeah.
They really don't get it. And the Xian Chan on the opposite hand of it are like locked in. They've got a mission. They're here to take what used to be theirs because we all fell out of, you know, everyone here fucked up and started doing their own thing when they should have been keeping on with the traditions of Archer Hawkwing, you know?
So, do people not want Rand to succeed because they want to rule the world, or do they not want him to succeed because they still think he might be a bad guy? Again, not the right term, I know, but...
It kind of depends, again, on your point of view. You know, like, you get a glimpse of it from the Dark Friend in the show, the gal who ends up pulling Rand's sword on him. She's like, you know, we just want this to end. You know, we're kind of, they have a point of view to where they're not even necessarily evil. It's just they don't want to continue on this, you know, hamster wheel type of thing. And I think it's kind of like ignorant thinking. You're just like, you're really not getting the bigger picture, but that's their kind of focus and point of view. Not all of them. Some of them are just evil fucks. They're like, we want power. You know, there's people join the dark side for lots of different reasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some of them are altruistic. Some of them are greed, you know, some of them power, you know, just it, there's lots of reasons. So really you get to see that Matt is linked to the horn and you're linked to the horn until you die. Matt thinks he's linked to the horn through the entirety of the series when actually I think he gets breaks the link.
That's right. That's right. Once you call, once you blow the horn and everyone comes to help you, do they just vanish again when the battle's over?
Yeah, basically. And we're out. Like, it's like, I'm a head out. Like, they just, they kind of go back to, so they live in Telenriad until they're called or reborn.
Oh, of and course. Like, of course.
My question is, like, can you call them for a party? Hey, what's up,
can
guys?
Can you just go to or at least while you're in Telenriad, you should be able to kick it.
What if they've been reborn and you call them? Can they not come? Oh. Are they not invited then because they're living as a mortal soul?
Yeah.
You know, that's like, that's more like canon, lore fodder, but it's like, you know, it's a thought.
So is Telenriad, is that where everyone kicks it in between lives or just the special soldier people?
The heroes, for sure, that's where they hang out until they're called or reborn. And like when they're reborn, it's just like everybody else. They don't know, but they somehow end up kind of manifesting that life, you know, in a different form.
Yeah.
According to that age, you know. Like Birgitta, she talks about, like I was telling you, like she gets ripped out of the world of dreams unnaturally at a certain point, and she starts to lose her memories. But before she loses her memories, she starts talking about remembering all, you know, several of her lives, how she died, you know, shit like that. How she's tied to the guy, I don't know if you remember the name, Gidel Kane.
Yes.
The guy with the two swords. They're always tied together, like romantically. He's usually older than her. So she'll like, I know it's time for my rebirth soon when I can't find him in Telenriad. So like there is some like workings to the wheel that they've kind of figured out. And they hint at it and they talk about it, but you kind of got to piece it together yourself.
Are there any recently deceased in the army? Like, is there anybody that we meet in book one that dies and then when the horn gets blown, they come back, or are all these people ancient?
I think they're all pretty ancient.
Like original Luz Theron soldiers.
Ooh, some of them are that old. Some of them are less old. Some of them have had several lives to like, and they end up kind of, like I said, they end up manifesting the same lives. So they always end up attaching back to the horn. But there is one guy and everybody kind of thinks he's either not real or, like it's just a story or, you know, an amalgamation of a fiction of several characters. And the name is Jane Farstrider.
Oh, I like that.
They're not dead. I don't want to, I'm going to say there because I don't want to spoil the character because it kind of catches you off guard. You're like, holy shit, that person does die. The horn gets blown again and they come back almost immediately,
okay.
Which is pretty cool because the person who ends up blowing the horn after Matt is close as hell with this person, like almost like uncle, because he's an orphan and he takes care of him. So he's so sad when he dies. Then he blows the horn and then he's like, gets to see him again. So it's pretty cool. Yeah, man. And to be honest, I don't have a ton to add on to it. It's just really the clip. And like, you see, like there's some other shit going on. Rand is really accepting that he's a dragon. You can see him kind of taking a leadership role. He's like, you guys are going to do this. I'm going to keep you guys safe. I got to go save Egwene. Like, he's really shouldering the burden because that's the type of person that he is. But also he's stopped just being like, I'm not the dragon. I'm just a guy. I'm doing some stuff. It's like, now he doesn't even like bother with that thought anymore. It's just like, okay, like this is, you know, he's like, him and Perrin actually are both kind of like the epitome of like, will, where there's a will, there's a way type of guys. They're going to get it done because it's the right thing to do. It's like, it doesn't matter if it sucks. Doesn't matter if it's going to be hard. They just do what's right. And those are one of the things that kind of like, when I say like, you know, it's a part of my character, it resonates with me. It's like, doing the right thing is almost always harder than doing the easy thing.
Amen.
And it's, you know, sometimes it can be more rewarding and sometimes it's, even though it's the right thing, it's painful as shit. And that's one of the things. It's like, you can't be afraid of that because you got to do right by the people that you love. And that's one of the things that always stuck with me through this whole reading of these books. So I love, man. I love hard. If you're in the circle you're in.
Yeah.
Tell you fuck up.
I only have one more question for you, Justin. Tell me more about this three-eyed frog.
Okay. So the Seanchan, they use animals in battle a lot.
Oh, Yeah.
And I'd have to research how they ended up with these, but some of them are like considered to be shadow spawn. Like the Grom is basically a three-eyed frog-looking creature the size of a grizzly bear. And they kind of like run slash hop like, you know, fucking 60 yards at a time.
Holy.
And they run in packs, and their only way you can kill them is just shoot them in one of their eyes because their hide's so thick.
Yeah.
But many people consider them shadow spawn. The Shanshan have trained them into weapons of war. They have something called Rokkan and Torrokkan. They're a prehistoric bird, for lack of a better term, that yes. they ride. So that's kind of like their air support. They scout with them and stuff. The Grom are kind of like companion beasts. They have another thing called the Lopar that's like, did you ever watch He-Man?
A little bit.
The fucking big tiger green cat that yes. he rode or whatever?
Yes.
They're like that, basically, except they're more leathery than furry. Holy they almost look shit. Like a monitor lizard that's giant, and they ride them. What else do they have? I think that's it. They have Rokkan, Torrokkan, Grom, Lopar.
And are these creatures that they, like, these are animals that exist already, but they have...
Right. They exist, but they've captured, trained, whatever, and they have people who specialize in handling them, flying them, whatever, training them.
Oh my God, I'm going to love the Shanshan so much, and I hate it.
I saw a tweet the other day. It's like, hey, if it weren't for the whole slavery thing, the Shanshan wouldn't be that bad. Wait. Ruh-roh. The Horn of Valir, I thought was a good clip because the White Cloaks, while informative, is not the most exciting thing, especially like people love to hate those guys for good reason. They're kind of the whipping boy of this world. So,
and they hate to love Shanshan.
Nobody really likes those assholes at first, but
they got badass powers, man. The dicks always have some cool. The good guys, like, well, we don't really want to use our powers that much. We're just going to.
We don't use animals for war. It's not cool.
Yeah.
Shanshan are like, well, fuck yeah, with our man eating lizards. So you want to fight or what?
I want to put that to my use. Well, as usual, you have melted my brain everyone out there. We record two episodes at once. And the first episode, I'm like, I'm hanging in there. I'm going toe-to-toe with Justin. And then by the end of the second one, my brain is just melted. And I got to just let it all sink in. Go back to book one where it all began so I can make some fucking sense out of it. I've had the show playing in the background while we've been recording too. So every once in a while I look up and I go, oh!
Good stuff. Keep it coming. Keep growing. Talk to us if you listen. I don't know. Some people must listen. I don't know.
Yeah. We'll tell someone about it. I know there's only one season. There's only so much to chew on. And, you know, if you know a wolf brother out there, a Wody, tell them about our show. We have lots of episodes to listen to. Like we got the commentaries. So if you're still thinking about doing a rewatch, go back to the commentaries, check those out. They're a lot of fun. And you can always talk to Fatty directly at Parched Ailman. We are Wolf Brothers on Twitter at Parched Ailman. Come at us directly at thankthelight@gmail.com. That is thankthelight@gmail.com. If you want to check out some other podcasts while you're waiting for our next release, go to whatsoundsawesome.com or wherever else you find fine, free shows. We have Time Pop, All the Answers, Truth Not Trends, Thank the Light, Be Brave. You want to know what it's about? Check it out.
For God's sakes, give us some ideas of shit to talk about. I'm running out of things. No, I'm not, really. I'll never run out. I'm so full of hot air, it's insane.
If you want to direct that hot air, I mean, we're gonna talk anyways. So if you want us to direct this, we got the Dragon Reborn. Is that the show?
Winter Dragon. Jesus, what the hell? We're gonna do an episode on the original and the recut of the differences, why we like it better or worse. Jeremy's gonna come on and talk about it.
We're gonna do an episode on Beverly Hills Cop 2. We're gonna come on here. We're gonna talk about some shit.
Then it's Deadpool. You know. Then we're just gonna keep
Deadpool 2. We're only gonna do number 2s.
Just gotcha.
The deuce. Yep.
That's how it goes. It's got Celine Dion. That's the only reason why we're doing it.
Hell yeah! Thank you, everyone out there. Thank you, Justin.
Blood and ashes, you motherfuckers. That's all I gotta say. It's getting real. Oh, Avienda has been cast. Oh.
Yes. Oh, yeah. We didn't do any news.
How did we not even talk about that?
She's been cast. We totally forgot about news at all. Yes. Talk and to
as
us,
a,
Justin.
As a book guy, it's, her name is Ayula, I believe is how it's pronounced. And she looks amazing. The right amount of, like, no prisoners taken and hotness. I can't wait. I don't know anything about her acting, but from just looking at some stills, she's got the, like, you know nothing, Randall Thor.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
Like, do you remember the time when you were peeling the stickers off the Blockbuster DVDs? Des, you think that's a good idea? Yeah. Irregardless. Irregardless of what? Yeah.
Oh, please tell me I didn't just lose you.